right, we are back with your favorite doctor, everybody's favorite doctor. He's an expert in health policy. He is a pediatrician. He is a true nerd, a nerd of nerds, one of the smartest people we know. He's the author of a number of two books, A Third to Come That Debunk Myths, and most importantly, he's a big YouTube star. He hosts a weekly segment called Healthcare Triage that you should be watching. It's a big, big deal on the YouTubes, and I fear he will be leaving us entirely for his YouTube Healthcare Triage segment, which is getting a lot of attention and raising his credibility even more than anything we can do here on Stand Up. And I have evidence, and he loves evidence, which is today we only get half an hour. So let the reduction begin with at Aaron E. Carroll on Twitter, Dr. Aaron Carroll. Thank you for joining us today, I guess.
Thank you.
You're only here for half an hour today. It used to be an hour.
Yeah, I can stay a few extra minutes, but yeah, I got to come up early.
What are you upset about that schools closed in Indiana? I'm happy about that. Our schools are closed today as well, my kids.
Because my kids at this point are going to go to school till July, it feels like. And, how many days can you cancel? It's crazy.
You don't think it was wrong to cancel? I mean, sometimes
no,
it's
no,
wrong.
Today was probably reasonable, but we've had others that are not, and we've had so many we have all these two-hour delays for cold, as if somehow by 9 a.m. it's significantly warmer than 7 a.m. I just don't get that.
Right. Well.
I don't know. Anyway, it's another day off. Not only that, they shut down work. I mean, they shut down IU yesterday from 5 p.m. or 2 p.m. yesterday. They started sending everybody home all the way through tonight. So, they're closing down businesses and work and everything. It's just weird.
There is a new campaign that one of my listeners, Keith Kaplan, just tweeted called StopTheSnow.org.
Yeah, I saw that.
Hoosiers are fired up. Together, let's unite and stand up for what we believe in. Sweat, sunburn, and swimming pools. Sign the petition. Very fun.
If they had any actual power, I would consider joining them.
I had a whole agenda, and still do, and we'll get to as much of it as we can to talk to you about. And then the news of CVS banning tobacco products broke this morning, and you know that's going to go viral, and everybody knows that you're going to be blogging about that at the Incidental Economist. This is a huge story. Are you familiar with it?
I am. I got to be honest with you. It's one of those. I didn't even know that pharmacies still sold tobacco.
So CVS becomes first large retail pharmacy chain to pull tobacco products from stores. It's very important to us that we are, as we are working with doctors and hospital systems and health plans, that they see us as an extension of their services. And if we're going to be a healthcare provider, this is not a quote, she said, then we can't be at the same time selling tobacco products. But they are selling, probably at CVS stores, a lot of unhealthy food products.
Sure. Well, I'm a cynical guy, so my guess is that they finally are selling low enough volume of it that they decided they would get more out of the PR than out of the sales. But who knows?
Exactly.
It's all a good thing. But I mean, it is. I mean, this what of course what's going to happen is everyone's going to call big government. Everyone's going to go, how dare they? It's freedom and everything. It's a private company making a private decision. Go ahead. We'll see how it works. The free market will tell us whether this was a good decision or not.
That's all you got on it?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, this is one where, we obesity is such a major issue, and it's one of those where it seems like we just don't do that much about it. We talk about trying to get a public health issue going, and it's small. Even the stuff that makes the big headlines, like the soda ban, that I just think that was just ridiculous. And to do that, smoking is, for all our complaints, has been a major victory. Think about how much smoking there used to be, just 10, 20 years ago. I mean, everywhere. You couldn't get on a plane even half the time, just 20 years ago without tons of people smoking. I can still remember flying, I think I was, in my young 20s, and, just people an aisle or two in front of me were smoking cigarettes. You couldn't go anywhere on college. I visited my alma mater last year, and no one was smoking. It was crazy. And I think it's just we've made such great strides that these kinds of movements now just feel somewhat natural. It's just this has been a progression. I think we've really beaten this into the psyche of America. Smoking is bad for you. It still occurs in numbers that are too high, but we have made significant gains to the point where now I think even private industry is taking steps on its own. That's fantastic. I really wish that we were seeing this kind of movement in other public health issues that are also significantly important.
Like, for example, first of all, it gets so politicized, right? I mean, the president put out a statement applauding the news of CVS stop selling cigarettes and other tobacco products. And just because he did that, won't there be a knee-jerk reaction from some on the right?
I said I think they're going to call this, they're going to blame it on government somehow, even if it's not, though it's not. They're going to call it like the end of freedom, even though it's not. The fact is that it's happening, and that it's happening without government intervention is a great, it's a win. If this is exactly how the world's supposed to work, is what I meant by the free market deciding. If truly people are angry enough and want to get their cigarettes so bad, CVS will see a significant loss in profit, and they'll move it back. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the pendulum has swung here. I think that Americans are really sort of anti-smoking at this point in general. That this has been a public health victory in convincing the public and educating them about the dangers of a product. And it's interesting at the same time, while they're pulling this kind of stuff off the shelf voluntarily, marijuana is getting legalized left and right. There are times we have to pause and say, like, you know what? This is what everybody wanted. This is what everyone's been fighting for. Let's take it as a win and let's keep going.
Well, yeah, but marijuana could be used as a medicine.
Yeah, but that's not why they're legalizing it. Some states.
No, you're right. It's not why. But
let's not go too far. I agree. I'm not denying that. But I think you're seeing states flat out legalize it. And which is, what many people have been arguing for years, that it's less harmful than tobacco. That it's, and here, okay, fine. CVS is taking this off the shelf. This is good. This is what victory looks like. This is what success in trying to educate the public looks like. I think it's great. But I in the same way, I don't try to get too down when things don't come right. We don't strut when we win. I'm happy that they did it. I'm curious to see what the outcomes will be. Without data, I have no idea how many cigarettes they were actually selling. I don't know if this will actually significantly reduce America's consumption of tobacco. I think it's certainly a great PR win for CVS. I'm sure that many who will falsely make this out to be some sort of act of big government. But, the things that always interest me, I try to be consistent, are like, what'll be the impact on actual public health? What will the changes be? And I don't know the answers to that. So we will wait and see.
Let's talk about some recent developments when it comes to public health. We can talk about heroin, we can talk about sugar, and we can talk about cancer. But let's start with sugar. Because there's a new study that reveals just how sick sugar can make us. If you get 25% of calories from added sugar, we're seeing triple the risk of heart disease death. My first question is, what sugar are we talking about? What kinds of sugar? Are all sugars equal?
Well, most of them are. I mean, you're usually talking about the kind of carbohydrate or sugar that you're just finding when they talk about added sugar, they're just talking about extra carbohydrates that you're getting in your diet through sugar. Things like soda, sugared sodas, or sugared beverages, or candy, or dessert, or things like that. But added simple carbohydrates that you're getting, they're probably mostly aiming at beverages, and the things like the candy or things that the dessert stuff you don't need. And what they found was that looking at a longitudinal cohort, which is the best way that they can do this at this time, because we really don't design randomized controlled trials to do this kind of stuff, mostly because it's unethical. We can't randomize people to eat tons of extra sugar. We know it's bad for them. But they were interested to see if looking at these kinds of longitudinal cohorts over time would show an association between sugar intake and cardiovascular disease. Because we know that fat intake is bad. We know that all the red meat everyone keeps pointing to is bad. We know that lots of things can be bad for cardiovascular disease, but sugar is not as well defined. And what they found was that added sugar significantly increases the risk of cardiovascular death. That just adding in, even as you said, a tiny amount equivalent to, I think, like a 20-ounce Mountain Dew every day, significantly increases your risk of cardiovascular disease. And so not only is sugar bad for obesity, not only is sugar bad for your teeth, it's also added extra sugar is bad for even cardiovascular disease, the idea that you could die of a heart attack or later heart failure or something like that. So it's another reason why added sugar is bad. Now, that doesn't mean that I think, as I'll try to be consistent, that we should have a 20-ounce soda ban. I think that that is a meaningless way to try to attack this problem that could theoretically backfire. But it does mean that we probably need some type of holistic public health intervention to try to change the way or try to convince Americans to change the way that they eat, because this is really significantly hurting their health.
I think I put a teaspoon of sugar.
I think I also posted a snarky line that it boggles my mind that people, including you, will continue to fight me that, like, diet soda is bad for you when diet soda has no proven detrimental effects. But here's a sugar-laden soda would potentially significantly increase the risk of heart disease.
Wait, I forget what I argue because I don't really mean it. It's all tongue-in-cheek. But what do I usually say?
I don't know. I won't say you because that's a joke.
No, go ahead, because I think I have in the past.
People argue some have a diet soda that the chemicals are just bad. Of course, nobody has a rationale. It's like, oh, it causes cancer. Well, no, that's lat link has never been proven.
Sugars, the aspartame or how do you say aspartame
or saccharin or whatever you pick your one. It doesn't matter to me. They've all been studied extensively, and none of them are linked in any way to cancer in human beings.
Are you pro or anti-cancer?
I'm anti-cancer.
I just wanted to get you on the record on that because I don't know if you work for Big Cancer.
In the past, like Wendell Big... Potter, I used to take all their money, but now.
Wow, unfair. Okay, the UN, speaking of cancer, disturbing news on World Cancer Day, which was yesterday. Cases are poised to surge in coming years, jumping 50% by 2030, according to the UN report. Now, here's how I read it. When I read the article about it, obviously I didn't read the study. I wouldn't know how to. That's your world.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is not going to jump in healthy rich people, healthy middle class people even. This is for people in third world countries. This is for poor people. This is for unhealthy people. If I stay in shape, if I exercise and eat right and have good access to good health care, this doesn't affect me.
To be honest, I actually didn't see this report, so I would have to actually go back and look at it.
Okay.
I have no trouble believing that if they are concerned about a surge in cancer, that it's going to be that it's not going to be universal, that it's going to disproportionately affect the poor and underserved populations.
Because and smokers and unhealthy people.
Yeah, exactly. As not only that, but as we this is part of a problem, as we solve infant mortality and we get children to live longer, then, of course, as they get into adulthood, it leaves them more open to die of other diseases. And if we're not ready to provide a healthcare system to protect them, they're going to get those diseases. And so it is possible that, as we do some good, we have to be aware that we have to continue to do good or else other statistics go up. In the same way that if I get everybody to quit smoking, as we have done in this country, they do die of other things. And it is not as if, if you get a country just to quit smoking, then all of a sudden everything looks rosy. Other types of cancers will go up as people get older and get them. But in general, that is true. We know what kinds of things are linked to cancer. It's usually unhealthy behaviors, and those tend to cluster often among people at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum or people who are underserved in general. So it makes intuitive sense. But I got to go read that report. I have to be honest, I missed it. But to see exactly what kinds of cancers they're talking about.
I'm just instant messaging my wife. I'm trying to tell her to come downstairs and argue with you about organic food. I don't think she'll come down, but I don't think she's even on instant messaging.
She's scared? Is that it again?
Boy, you're starting it scared. yes, probably. I know I would be if I didn't agree with you, but I whenever I try to disagree with you, I get trounced. So, she said yes. Hold on. I want to come argue. She said yes that she's there. Organic food. So I don't want you to go into that until she comes down, if she will. I don't think she'll come down. The kids are home anyway. They'll probably want to come down, bring the damn dog down here as well. So let's get to something more boring before we even hit that organic food.
Okay.
You just made a whole video about that for Healthcare Triage. But, the big headline yesterday was the Congressional Budget Office prediction that Obamacare will end 2 million jobs. And so we heard a lot from Republican critics of it saying, I told you so, and it's got to be repealed, and so many other things. But, I read a number of articles about this. I posted 4 articles at Stand Up.
We'll read another one later today from CNN because they asked me to write a piece on this.
I was wondering when you were going to come out with something on this. But basically, the long and short of it is the way I see it is that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is actually going to provide people with the choice to not have to work as much.
That's exactly right. So there are benefits to Obamacare. There are benefits to people, especially people in certain sectors, that make them less likely to want to work. So you will see some people at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum who are basically working and maybe leaving the house even if they didn't want to. And we're talking Medicaid. We're talking about people who make less than 138% of the poverty line. These are like minimum wage workers when they have children sometimes. And so, you know, if let's say you're a single mom with a kid and or two kids and you're working a very low paying job just because, you know, you want to try to make enough so that they can eat because you don't qualify for Medicaid. And because, you know, if you make any money at all in some states, you don't qualify for Medicaid. And so now all of a sudden they gave you Medicaid. And so you say, you know what? I don't want to work. I want to stay home with my two kids until they go off to school. And so I'm not going to work. That's a voluntary reduction in the labor force. No one was fired. That is someone who's choosing not to work. And maybe some people argue that that's terrible. Why would we want to convince people not to work? But often it's those same people who are arguing that why don't people, you know, take care of their kids and make sure that they grow up healthy. So we can debate that. But there are two other kinds of people. There are people who are like 62 who might want to retire, who have made money, but they can't retire because they can't get health insurance and they have to wait till they're 65. So they're being forced to work old till they get older. Well, now they don't have to. They know that they can retire at 62. They can go to the exchanges. They can get their insurance. They can choose to retire early, which, by the way, is not always a terrible thing since we have unemployment. If a 62-year-old vacates a job, that means somebody else can pick it up. That's great for unemployment. Another way might be that, you know, some people have been stuck at a job. They have job lock because they can't go out and start a business or be an entrepreneur because they know that if they leave their job, they will lose their insurance. They won't be able to get insurance. Well, now they can. They're guaranteed through the exchanges and the subsidies that if they leave their job, they'll be able to get insurance at a reasonable price, often with subsidies, while they become entrepreneurs. These things like early retirement, taking care of your family, being an entrepreneur are things usually that conservatives like. Those things are all benefited by the Affordable Care Act, and they are resulting in a voluntary reduction of supply. And I don't understand. People cannot understand between supply and demand. This is not jobs that are saying we're going to reduce demand by, like, saying we're not going to have as many workers or we're going to make people part-time. This is very clearly a reduction of supply. In other words, workers choosing not to work. And if you read specifically what the CBO says, and I'll quote it here, the estimated reduction stems almost entirely from a net decline in the amount of labor that workers will choose to supply, rather than from a net drop in businesses' demand for labor. So it will appear almost entirely as a reduction in labor force participation and in hours worked relative to what would have occurred otherwise, rather than an increase in unemployment, that is, more workers seeking but not finding jobs, or underemployment, such as part-time workers who would prefer to work more hours per week. It expressly says this is not what everybody in the media is now claiming that it is. It is not all of the, you know, jobs disappearing. It is not full-time jobs going to part-time jobs. It is a mechanism by which people will likely choose to work less because of extra benefits that they have been given. And this is published in 2010. The CBO published their budget and economic outlook, and everybody called it the job-killing bill, and it's just an update of that report in 2014. I get why opponents of the Affordable Care Act will twist this. I am baffled why the media can't learn.
Right. Okay, guess what?
What?
She's here. She's ready.
Let's do it.
You know, I'll give you my headphones. First of all, test that mic, sweetheart. My wife just came down. Dr. Erin Carroll has it. Go ahead, talking to it.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Dr. Erin Carroll put out, he's written about this extensively. He's talked about it extensively. And yesterday or this week, he's got a new video, Healthcare Triage, which everybody should watch, about organic food. Now, his wife is like my wife. That's how he opens the video.
Yep.
But and we are personal friends with the Carrolls, so he knows my wife. So Valerie just came down. The kids are upstairs running amok with the dogs, so no one's watching them. They're probably eating something non-organic as we speak. But anyway, let me give her the headphones because I only have one set, and I'm going to just get right next to you here. Put these headphones on so you can hear Erin. And actually, let's share a mic, too, because I won't be able to hear him. Come here. All right. So, Dr. Carroll, why don't you go ahead and start a little bit of the the rant, if you will, the facts on organic foods.
So, you know, and granted,
say hi to Val first.
Hi. I thought I said hi when she got on before, but hello, Val. One of the reasons that people, I think, often push for organic food is because there's a belief that it is somehow more nutritious, it's providing you more vitamins or more nutrition in some way, and also that it is safer, that there are, you know, reduced levels of danger, you know, like they are safer in terms of the levels of pesticide or that they are safer in terms of, you know, other kinds of contamination. And what I was talking about was that there has been a monstrous amount of research in these areas. And when you put all of it together, there's almost no evidence whatsoever that there is any kind of increased nutrition. They looked at, you know, all kinds of vitamins and found no significant difference. They looked at 12 different nutrients, and they could only find, I think it was two. One of them is phosphorus, which really, and it was all based on one incredibly outlying study, and the other one was something also was even more sort of odd, and it was all based on two studies that didn't even report all of their data. So when you look at it, all of it, there's just no data that show comprehensively that it has more nutritional value. And then they look at, you know, safety, and they look at things like pesticides, and they find that the levels, whether they reach dangerous levels, no difference in any of the studies. These are out of Europe and out of the United States, so it's not even as if it's one versus the other. They look at all kinds of contamination with bacteria, with fungal stuff, with toxins, no significant difference. And when they look in human beings and, like, does this stuff actually make you healthier, they looked at pregnant women, they looked at kids to see whether it would reduce allergic or atopic disease or asthma or things like that, no difference. They looked at, I think there were like 11 other studies of, you know, not pregnant women and not kids, so like regular adults or population, looked at all kinds of diseases. They find no difference. And so the overwhelming evidence is that there just is no health benefit to organic food, either sort of in the lab or even in reality. And given that, I think it's problematic that we make any fruit or vegetable the enemy, that we make any kind of healthy food, like the idea that someone's going to eat a salad or a piece of fruit or, you know, a healthy piece of meat, and we make that the enemy as if that is the bad thing, that we need to go even further when we have so much trouble getting people to eat healthy in general. Okay. That's my thing in a nutshell.
All right. So when you're talking, are you generalizing all organic food, or are you talking just produce with all these, with all this research?
Meat. What about milk?
They did studies in eggs. They did studies in milk. They did studies in
So with
milk, you're right. So I think, like, you know, some people point to milk and the fish oil. Well, first of all, like, there's been almost no evidence. Secondly, that's only in raw milk, which nobody drinks. And third, I would argue that we shouldn't be drinking that much milk anyway. So I don't know why anyone's going there.
Well, I just see that's where you get me, is the milk and the meat. How can you say that pumping animals with hormones and antibiotics?
I'm against antibiotics and meat, but that is for the global population, not in terms of the health content of the individual meat. With the hormones, see, this is also part of the thing. It's like the hormones are, I don't want that either. Don't get me wrong. And I would love to see policy change, but I would rather see, you know, people get reasonably cheap food and the ability to eat than I would to sort of rail against things which have yet to be proven to be unhealthy that we have lots of evidence for and don't. You know, people will say things like hormones are making kids go through puberty earlier.
Let's stick to the fact that, like, how we consume and how we buy here in my household. So my wife buys almost entirely organic produce and always organic milk. As a matter of fact, last night, because of the storm, there were long lines, so I couldn't get the organic milk, which is, by the way, a lot more expensive. All the organic stuff is a lot more expensive. And I said to her, you know, why don't you just buy a half gallon of regular skim milk? And she said, are you crazy? And I'm like, this one time, I mean, one time, you're not going to die. You're not, nothing would happen. But she went and she waited in a long line and got organic milk. So could we drill down on just strawberries or blueberries or just one product to convince her that, you know, we don't need to spend more money.
Yeah,
just strawberries are fine, and as long as you wash them, it's good, right?
Of course, because first of all, the washing has only to do with the handling and the stuff that's on it. So it doesn't matter whether it's organic or not. That's who's handled it since it's left the shop. And that's about, you know, where it's been stored. And that's irrelevant.
Right. So organic spinach isn't healthier if someone has a piece of shit on their hand and touch it. You can get salmonella from organic or not.
Exactly correct. And that is what they found. Was the rates of contamination with bacteria or stuff like that are exactly the same. Or so close that they're indistinguishable. Because your chance of getting... That is all about what's happened since it left. You know what I think. You know, usually, I mean, what are you concerned about with the strawberry? Like, what do you think it is? It's not. You know, what would be the difference? Most people are saying it's either because of pesticides, ignoring the fact that organic farming uses lots of pesticides. They just use quote unquote natural pesticides, like the fact that like arsenic would be healthy because I'm not saying to use arsenic, but arsenic is natural. Arsenic will kill you. Natural doesn't mean safe. Natural just means didn't make it in a lab. Lots of things we make in a lab are actually good in the right quantities. Regardless,
you came down here. You gotta argue.
I gotta claim my case here. So basically, my whole idea is where it's growing, the earth it's coming from. If it's saturated with pesticides or saturated with chemicals, that it's not going to be as nutrient based, right? It's not compost,
but
it's
okay.
So why the huge organic craze then, Aaron?
Well,
how can you explain that?
I personally, this is where you're asking opinion now, so I'm now veering out of science. It's a philosophy. I think the people, I think for a number of reasons. One, I think for some, it's a philosophy because it makes intuitive sense that if we take better, you know, if we don't quote unquote poison the earth, if we don't put stuff into it, that it will remain natural, that it will remain beautiful, that it will remain fine. There is a real, I think, environmental, at least debate going on about whether sort of industrial farming is better or worse for the environment, and that is real, and I will own that. And there's also, I think, a very real concern that certainly when we talk about animals, that industrial farming can be cruel, and those are all real. But what we have to own as rich people, and all of us listening to this radio show worldwide qualify as rich people, is that we can't feed probably the world, meaning everybody, if we just said, you know what, no more bad fertilizers, no more bad, pesticides, because we, unless, of course, all of us want to go back to being farmers, because until sort of the industrial age, everyone had to grow, like, their own food, and, like, that was the major employer of the world was making the food. We live in a world now where people get to be health services researchers and, you know, yoga instructors and radio stars, because someone else is making the food, and that's a small population. And unless we want to go back to a world where tons of the land has to be used for farming, and tons of people have to work in farming, and food will probably be much more expensive, meaning that lots of people won't be able to get it, it would be impossible to convert the entire agricultural sector to quote unquote organic.
I would argue that if we ate less meat, then we could certainly
we'd have to
feed
grow more
the
food.
Entire world. Yes,
well, then we'd
but
have
we'd
to grow more.
But we could grow more food. Planting a crop takes a lot less.
That's different.
Cattle.
Well, I don't want to get off track here. That's different than the discussion that we're having. And
right,
again,
okay,
that's
I
why
agree.
I want to go back.
So
to strawberry.
Is why I think people want organic, but because they just believe it's healthier. They just believe it's more nutritious.
I believe that it's progression. I think it's about how we cultivate the land and how we use our resources. And I just
but we're talking about two different things. We're talking about morality. We're talking about environmentalism, and we're talking about nutrition, and I'm with you on the morality issue.
Yeah, so
I'm with you on the environmentalism, but in terms of the whether we not, you know, we feed our kids like last night, you
right.
could have gotten
right.
organic
right.
milk. I mean,
it's a holistic
Pete,
thing.
It's not.
Like in a
it's
storm
the,
when things
I mean,
are bad.
Regular.
Grab the regular strawberries.
But it's not. I don't do things one-sided with one perspective. It's the reason I do eat organic is multifaceted. So, I can't make an argument because of just the nutrition. I mean...
But that's fine, as long as you're not making that argument. If you're not making the argument that they're less healthy for in terms of how your body processes the produce. It's different if you're talking about environmentalism or shifting to a different way of living. That's different than saying, you know, I don't want to eat strawberries because of the pesticide.
I only drink
fair trade coffee because I want workers to be treated in such a way. I won't argue with that. If they say they're drinking fair trade coffee because they think somehow the beans are, you know, that's a whole different world. That's not real. And so if it's if people are eating organic because it's a philosophy and a way of life, and that, fine. But the second that they say it's more nutritious or it's safer, that's a problem. And when they tell other people, you shouldn't be eating that because that is not as nutritious or it is not as safe, you are now talking people out of eating healthy food when it's produce that might otherwise eat it, and demanding that they eat something more expensive for which there is no additional nutritional benefit that's ever been proven.
Well, while I've got you, one more marriage dispute. Herbal remedies. Last night, my wife wanted to roll out the oil of oregano because someone was having a sniffles.
Yes.
Go ahead.
There's no evidence for that. But again, the sniffles don't need to be treated. Why are you treating the sniffles at all?
Oh, my gosh. See, this is my issue with the herbal stuff. If it's not going to hurt you, why not just do it?
Oh, no. That's fine. But the problem is when someone has a cold, I recommend, or a sore throat, I recommend hot tea. Because hot tea feels good, and that's great. But when we start ascribing it a medicinal benefit that it's going to provide a cure, that's where I'm putting up my hand.
Well, for an ear infection.
I would always go to that first before I start loading up with Advil.
Put oil of oregano for an ear infection? Where were you putting it?
Where I put it on a little bit of cotton.
Right.
And it's not 100% oil of oregano.
Right.
And I put the cotton in around the ear.
That's, what do you mean around the ear? Like outside the ear or in the ear?
In the ear. You jam it
outside,
in the ear.
I do not jam it in the ear.
Putting it on a Q-tip and putting it in?
No, putting it on a Q-tip. No, on a cotton ball.
Okay. Well,
it's a pain reliever. I mean, look it up. It's awesome.
Look it up.
The pain is not on the outside of the ear. The pain is on the inside of the ear. Oh. That's not going to do anything.
Why? Yeah, but it kind of leaks into the inside.
Well, you want it inside the ear. Now we're going to have a problem because now you're putting something that's a food inside a body cavity. You could not ask bacteria for a better place to try to grow than on, like, a closed-off, you know.
When I was a kid, we put garlic and olive oil in the ears. That's what we did. Garlic.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Well, work,
so
no,
I really...
They all go away. Their ear infections, the vast majority of them are going to go away.
I'm a strong believer that you can... And there's everything to cure you the earth provides. Everything. I don't think we need... I mean, I really believe in Native Americans and the medicine men and all of that. So I really...
You're losing us.
I really think...
No, but I'm not even going to argue about this. It's like you had me right up until you took a food and put it into the ear cavity where bacteria would love to grow. You're feeding them, and that's my major problem. Also, first of all, I have a problem with that because now that actually might increase the chance of a bacterial infection. Secondly, my major problem is that there's no evidence and no study that works. I still don't care if you do it because that's your choice. But if we're talking about pain, there are phenomenal things that we have that have been proven to be safe that actually help pain. Forget the antibiotic. How about some, you know, Tylenol or ibuprofen?
But why go there if you don't have to?
Kids don't need to live in pain. Why?
Yeah, but
why
if something else. So, Aaron, are you arguing the fact that turning to food or natural resources to cure something?
No, if you're talking about somebody eating a food, I'm not arguing with you. Putting a food into the internal.
Okay, well, that was like.
Cavity,
oh,
I will argue with.
That's irrelevant because I.
Well, just
yeah,
about
I
the herb,
even...
what about these herbal stores, the herbal stores, the natural remedies, the witch hazels.
Well, again, witch hazel things like that. It's like, well, it's been, some of those things have, you know. Again, if it's something which
I mean, you would be arguing
not negative. No, I just think everything has a benefit and a harm. I think my problem is I think you assume everything you're doing has no harm.
No, I don't. But what are naturalists? I mean, people make a career out of this. This is what they do. They prescribe natural things that are occurring in the earth that you don't create in the lab. So how are you going to have an argument?
But lots of drugs we use were grown in the earth and make a lab. You know, tamoxifen was found in the yew tree. You know, acetaminophen, you know, aspirin.
Yeah, but you don't have to create it in the lab.
He can
so
make
you
the
can...
argument about it because randomized controlled blind study. How come you're not saying that?
Me? Well, I don't know who you're yelling at. So it's like, but it's, so I have no, just because it is quote unquote natural does not mean it has no harm. Lots of things in nature are totally poisonous and it'll kill you. Lots of things in nature are good
yes.
and will help you.
Yes.
I don't
yes.
care where the thing
yes.
comes from. I don't truly at all. I just care if it works and if the benefits outweigh the harm. And if mm-hmm. there is a, you know, there have been studies that show, ironically enough, that chicken soup or something in it actually raises some things in the body. I'm all for chicken soup. Go ahead, do it. there are studies that show that other natural things don't do any good and potentially do harm. Then I'm against it. I don't want people to do mm-hmm. it. I mm-hmm. do not care where it comes from. And the oil of oregano, as I said before, I was not saying one. I don't care about it. It's fine. Do it if you like, right up until you're putting it in the in letting it trickle into the ear. Because you wouldn't put sugar water into the ear. You wouldn't put other things into the ear. The ear is not meant to have things poured into it. That's not natural.
All right, and we got to let Aaron go. Unfortunately,
no, I'm you know what? I can actually. I'm okay for
what?
I'm okay for a few more minutes. Everyone is being good, so we're all all right.
All right.
So,
any other questions, Bill?
It's just about benefits and harms. It's not a natural versus not natural thing. And this is the thing. Organic food, let's getting back to this stuff, is pushing us into a point where we are literally arguing that people should be less likely to eat fruits and vegetables, you know, than other fruits and vegetables, when truly worldwide, getting everybody to eat fruits and vegetables would be a massive win. Massive.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But
I'm with you on that.
We have a huge, we have a decent chunk of the population, which tends to also be at the high end of the socioeconomic spectrum, which is making the argument that we should make readily available fruits and vegetables harder to find, and that we should until we can convert it all to organic, which again has no proven nutritional or safety benefit. I would much rather put our efforts into just getting everyone to eat some kind of fruit and vegetable, and then maybe someday we could have a real debate about the rest of it. But at the moment,
you agree that we shouldn't be feeding livestock people food. You agree that we should be feeding
livestock
with
natural
grass,
whatever they would normally eat. I don't like hormones. I'm not all for that. I don't like antibiotics. We should not be using antibiotics anytime we don't need antibiotics, and I totally agree with that. And so that practice, I'm totally fine. In fact, I wish they would get rid of that tomorrow. But I'm not – this is where the philosophy will differ. I probably don't spend enough time, rooting around trying to figure out exactly what that – Amy certainly does that. Maybe that's why I don't, spend as much time looking at that kind of stuff. But my major problem is when we try to convince people that or make it that some food which is good for you is somehow not. And that I think is a misdirected argument.
So are you saying that there's zero nutritional benefits to organic?
I can say it's not a statistically significant difference. And so again, it is America. Do what you like.
There's shred of evidence. Nothing.
Well, what do you mean by a shred of evidence? Can I find
a tiny study
where someone measured some measurement in a lab and they found one was higher than the other? Yes. But when we aggregate it, when we say, okay, well, that was one tiny study. Was that perhaps an outlier? Let's look at that in the context of all the other work. When you put it all together, which is the way you should do it, there is no statistically significant difference in most of this stuff. It just isn't there. And you would expect it to be there in order for it, to make these claims hold water and to certainly, make the cost worthwhile. Now, again, I'd say if it's all about a philosophy, if it's all about other reasons, then it's America. Do whatever you want. And
now, do you know what Dr. Oz says about this?
Oh, okay, tell me. But I don't know why he would think that would convince me.
Dr. Carroll has been a guest on Dr. Oz's show. Do you not like Dr. Oz? Because he's better looking than you?
No, actually, when I was on his radio show, actually, I found him to be incredibly engaged and interesting. I think the TV show is sometimes a bit more scripted, and I also think that sometimes he makes claims that are wholly unsupported by science. But go ahead.
Well, I don't really know exactly, but I'm sure he has an argument for you.
See, that's not fair, the way to argue, to say that somebody else might have an argument against me without telling me what it is.
Yeah,
how am
can't
I
really
supposed
do
to
much
counter
that?
Just saying. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, here's the best thing about all this, the fact that I brought my wife down here to talk to Dr. Carroll. First of all, I'm going to get beat up by my wife and my family because Dr. Carroll is king. Most importantly, Dr. Carroll is a pediatrician. And if he wasn't our close personal friend and we brought our kids to him and he said these things, I almost feel like they would be more valid to you than the fact that I have a close personal friendship with him. But, you know, my...
if it makes you feel any better, my wife does all this stuff too, or buys a lot of this kind of food too, and I have not convinced her of any of, or nor any of my friends.
Because you're married to her, we don't believe anything our spouses say.
I am straight, however.
It is. I think some people buy into this. I think for the philosophical reason, it is not because of a scientific. It's not a scientific reason that they started. It's part of a philosophical reason, and I can't say enough. I'm fine with that. It's when we take our personal beliefs or our philosophy and we try to make other people want to also believe them by bringing in verifiable scientific facts. That's where my issue is. If people tell me that they're vegetarians because they have a moral objection to eating animals, I don't ever argue with them. I understand that. I don't necessarily share the value, but I get it. That's totally fine. But if they start saying that they're a vegetarian because they have some reason that, you know, the protein, you know, murders you or this or that, then I might argue because I'm like, okay, now there's no evidence for that. You know, there's no science behind that. Now you're making, if that is why you're a vegetarian, that does not make sense to me.
Can I just have one scientific argument with you?
Yeah.
That I always make with my husband. So we can't do things just because they're proven can or cannot do, because aren't there always studies that are going to disprove or validate this or validate that? So sometimes I just kind of go with my instinct. I mean, I think that scientific minds operate this way, where you just look at the evidence all the time. I mean, do you ever deviate, Aaron, from that?
Yes, all the time, because I think you have to look at things holistically with respect to risks and benefits. I know that there have been studies that show that, like, you know, drinking alcohol is probably worse than not drinking alcohol. But at the same time, a really good beer, you know, improves my quality of life so much that I believe that benefit to my quality of life outweighs the very, very, very tiny but probably greater than zero risk to my health that it proves or that it exists. So it is not that I say I only do things that make me totally healthy. I do whatever I think is going to raise maximally the benefits to my world as opposed to the harm. Here's another good example. Number one killer of kids, I said this in the radio show before, number one killer of kids by far, car accidents. By far. The best way to protect my children and protect all children will be never to put them in a car again and never to let them drive anywhere. We would save lots of lives right off the bat. But I think we could all agree that our quality of life and our quality of our children's lives would be harmed by not putting them in cars. And so we make the justification in our head every day that this very real risk that we are placing on our children's safety is okay because the benefit to our lives holistically is worthwhile. I feel the same way about food. In other words, that if there is a risk, it is so tiny and so small and so difficult to detect that the quality of my life is raised by ignoring it and not caring about it. I would say the same thing about cell phones. We could always say that it's maybe, who knows, maybe one out of a billion people will get a brain tumor because of a cell phone. But the 4 billion people that use them will see their lives improved so much that we own the small, very, very small, but real risk. And that is how I would say that I make most of the choices in my life, that I choose to say we're not getting risk to zero, and so we have to decide at what point the benefits holistically outweigh the very real but very, 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 very small harms.
Basically, what you said, though, is that you like to drink and drive while talking on your phone.
With the kids in the car.
Did I misunderstand that?
That's a politician. There you go, Pete. Very good.
All right, have to let you go? Or I have a bunch of calls now.
Oh, I'm actually okay. I think I'm okay. Everything's fine. It's all fine.
What did he say?
I'm good.
He's okay.
All right. So unfortunately, we're sharing a pair of headphones and a microphone. I took the headphones off of her. I've been pushing my ear up against hers the entire time you've been talking to her. I thought that was a great exercise. I applaud my wife for coming on the air with you. Now, listen, I've got to take a break. Go ahead.
Bye, Aaron. Thank you very much for shedding light.
Thank you. I love you. It's great.
He said, I love you. All right. She said, I love you, kind of under her breath, though. And it's kind of a, I love ya. It was more of a ya than a you. But to be fair, I'm her husband. I get the same thing. Anyway, I've got to take a break. I want to get these phone calls. Will you have time to do that, or should we let you go?
Yeah, let's do it. No, let's go. It's fine.
All right, let's take a break. Please stay on the phones. Amy, Michelle, Jennifer, even Mario. Some great calls and questions. I'd love to. I'll come right back and turn the doctor over to you. We'll be right back.
Important issues. Unimportant host. Stand up with Pete Dominic.
All right, welcome back to the conversation. Dr. Aaron Carroll is here. We're going to your phone calls right now. Aaron, you still there?
No.
Hello? Hello?
Hi.
Oh, wait a second. Who's this?
Sydney.
Oh, Dr. Carroll thought because I put my family member on, he should put his on. Hello, Sydney. This is Dr. Carroll's daughter. How are you?
Good.
I have one question for you. Have you ever beat your daddy in an argument?
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was by any chance?
No.
All right, but at least we do have an affirmative yes that you have beat your dad. Do you like staying home from school? In Indiana, the schools are canceled. In New York, the schools are canceled. Are you happy when school's canceled?
Yes.
All right, well, you stand up with Pete say you're listening to Stand Up with Pete Dominic.
Okay.
Say it.
Hello?
I was trying to get her to do a liner.
Oh, well,
I told her to say, you're listening to Stand Up with Pete Dominic, but
yeah,
she ran away.
She's probably nervous.
She doesn't want to sell out anyway, I understand.
Exactly.
All right, let me go to the phones.
She likes another show better.
I'm sure it's your YouTube videos that you're selling us all out for. Amy in North Carolina is on with Dr. Aaron Carroll, who's on Twitter, at Aaron E. Carroll. If you're not following him, you should. Go ahead, Amy.
Good morning. I was just calling to support your wife a bit. I'm a nurse practitioner, and my husband is an organic farmer, so we have a kind of an interesting viewpoint on the whole organic thing. Mm-hmm. And I was just wanted to comment on some of the studies that you were talking about at the very beginning. I would encourage listeners to go and look and see who created or conducted those studies. A lot of times, especially the really large ones, are done by companies that have a stake in making sure organic doesn't flourish or that they keep control of the conventional market. Monsanto and Syngenta and Dow Chemical, they've got a big stake in making sure that your GMO seeds continue to get processed and that they can continue to put out more and more chemicals, because as foods adapt and crops adapt to these pesticides, they're having to create new pesticides to take care of weeds and different things. And that's
who funds the studies that you're citing?
Lots of different groups, which is why I would never cite one study and say this is how it is, which is unfortunately what I think even opponents and supporters will sometimes do. This is why, if you go watch the video, I talk about a huge meta-analysis systematic review, which looked at every study published over a long period of time. It was hundreds of studies, you know, put them all together, tried to figure it out, examined things like publication bias and things like that. And it's the sort of the best way for us to gather up all the research to try to remove biases. And that's the results that I'm talking about.
Is her concern fair?
Of course it is. It's the same way that we would have that concern if a drug company was the only one that did research
right.
on the drug. And of course, and again, that's why I would never pick a study, one, and talk about this study. That's not what I did. I'm talking about hundreds of studies,
right.
all of them
Amy, it's a,
in the
it's
medical
a...
literature. And I give all the, go watch the video, read, I link to the studies, I link to everything that's there. This data is available for everyone to read. I'm always for everybody making up their own mind. And I'm giving you my read.
If you want more on this video and to share it with people, if you agree with Dr. Carroll, Amy, great question, by the way. Healthcare Triage on YouTube or at HC Triage on Twitter. And I'm sure Dr. Carroll has that post. I know he has at The Incidental Economist, which is where he blogs. Let's go.
But I also want to say, we shouldn't, because sometimes people who support organic farming will do studies, and they may find that they're worse. I wouldn't totally discount their results either.
Yeah.
I think that owning the conflicts of interest is important. I think acknowledging them is real, but that, I also think that never taking an individual study but placing them all in the context of the huge body of research we have is what we should do to minimize bias, and that is what I did.
You certainly haven't won everybody over on Twitter
never
or
gone.
On the calls.
I own that, yes.
Michelle in Florida.
Yes, and Dr. Carroll, you know, I appreciate what you're saying about looking at multiple studies. Personally, I'm more interested, I think, in not so much the differences in nutrition between the organically and the non-organically farmed foods, but I'm sure that the toxicity of those chemicals that are doused on those plants, it's not something that you can just wash off.
Oh, but they do study. I see. So, but you say you don't believe. Now, if I tell you I take them into a lab and I don't tell you which one is which, and I tell you to cut them up and I say test them for dangerous chemicals and things like this, and I say tell me if either one gets to, you know, anything that you'd be concerned about, and the answer is no.
Well, so that's the thing, and you know, and that's the email that I got from the Noble Pies, who uses all their local produce in their pies. It's a great segment with Aaron. It's hard to argue with science. Science is the foundation for making informed decisions. You can deny it and just not want to believe it, but why? And what Dr. Carroll is saying to you, Michelle, is randomized controlled blind study, right? One is, one isn't, and the science, the evidence, is what?
Yeah, I'm not telling you, like, hey, it's not that you're saying there's toxic and I'm saying there's not. I'm saying, okay, if we both agree that we would go through this methodology and we would test the strawberries and we see which we can measure, you know, bad levels of the chemicals, and it turns out that you can't figure out which is the bad one, which is the organic and which is the not, by whether or not they reach a bad level, then at that point I feel like science has shown that, like, that hypothesis just isn't holding water. And so at that point I say, okay, it was an interesting hypothesis.
It's similar.
But it's not reality.
It's really similar to the global warming debate, evolution debate. Yeah. Your gut tells you one thing and science tells you the other. And, you know, you can't blame someone like Michelle or my wife for saying, listen, one thing has friggin' pesticides, a chemical sprayed on it, and one does not. Why do I need to eat a test?
And not only that, you will never, ever, ever hear me say, if somebody says to me, like, I want to do this, I say, fine. My issue is when we start telling other people what to do, or lecturing them, or trying to change the way that policy happens, and that's not based on sort of what evidence and data and science tells, then that's when I get a little bit, you know, riled up. So if you want to eat organic, that's fine. That is your choice.
Other people eat
organic is a problem.
I support it more for the issues of agriculture, farming, and environmentalism.
Yeah,
ideas.
And I'll be honest with you. As more and more I read into that, I'm not sure how truthful that is either, but I don't know enough about that to make a claim one way or the other. But I'm
going
to have to do more reading.
I'll have to rely like that on everything else with science. I'll change my mind as soon as global warming is disproved.
Right. That's all
by scientists.
All of these things. That's exactly what I say all the time. Like, if when they come up with the studies and the evidence that prove that this is wrong, I will change my mind right in front of your eyes. And I've done it in the past. And so that is what will happen.
All right, we are out of time. Dr. Aaron Carroll, thanks for joining us for the full hour. We thought you weren't going to be able to, but we really appreciate it. And my wife does too. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.